Welcome to the NBA Weekly. Jordan here with Connor, bringing you the most important stories every week. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at the NBA Weekly. And if you have any feedback, more than 160 characters, you can email that to us. That's thenbaweekly@gmail.com.
All right. So the big news this week is the NBA draft. Last week, we left off right before all the craziness that was the NBA draft happened. So I'm just going to briefly go through each pick and discuss each one for a minute. Probably going to go about midway through the lottery, and then I'm going to go through the lottery, and then after that, I'll just talk about some highlight picks. So obviously, first is Markelle Fultz, number one overall to the 76ers. You got to give it an A+. The Sixers didn't give up a ton to get it, and now he's a perfect fit. He's exactly the player that the Sixers needed, and now they have their big three. They have a guy who can play both ends of the guard. They have a shoot. He can shoot. He can space the floor. And then he is a good complement to Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. That's what they needed. They need their third member of an incredibly talented core. Probably the three most talented young guys, other than maybe like Karl-Anthony Towns, in the league. So that's a really good young core that's going to terrorize the league in a couple of years. And then going on to the second pick is Lonzo Ball. I'm going to give him an A-. The only reason is because I personally think De'Aaron Fox is a better player. I think it's still a pretty good pick. I still think he's probably the third best player, which is crazy since the top three players in my eyes are all guards. So that's the only reason I'm going to give him an A-. I value De'Aaron Fox just a little more. I think he has a little more two-weight. You know, he's better on both sides. But Lonzo Ball is still a good player, good vision. And they didn't end up doing what I thought would have been the dumbest thing in the world and trade this pick to try to get Paul George early. That would have just been ridiculous. And moving down. The Celtics, I'm going to give the Boston Celtics, I'm going to give them a B+. And the reason is, first of all, I don't think they should have still had this pick. I think it should have been either for the T-Wolves or the Indiana Pacers should have had this pick. And Paul George and Jimmy Butler should be on their team. And I am going to penalize them a little bit for not making that deal, because they could have had somebody who could make him contend overall, like, right away. Instead, they get Jason Tatum. You could probably argue he's the most NBA ready player right now. He's pretty good on both sides. He's more offensively polished, but what worries me is he can't shoot the three ball already. And I'd like to see a wing be able to shoot the three coming right out anymore. In today's NBA, you have to be able to shoot the three. And if your big thing is offense, what are you doing with that three ball? So I'll give him a B+. Still probably a solid pick. He'll probably be a decent contributor, but he shouldn't be on their team. And then moving down again, let's talk about Josh Jackson of the Phoenix Suns. I'm going to give it an A+. And the reason is fit and potential. It's a combination of the two. They have Devin Booker. They needed a defensive wing very badly. They are a bad defensive team. Devin Booker does not play defense. And they got a stud. And they got Josh Jackson. He can play on both sides of the ball. And he's really raw offensively, so your hope is he doesn't become Andrew Wiggins and grade out as the worst defensive wing in the league. And then we just don't talk about how athletically gifted he is, and so that's why we take him. We are hoping that, if you're the Suns, you're hoping that he's going to develop on both sides. And he's really showed defensive intensity, and he might be the best player in the draft. I think that his floor is a little bit lower than Fultz, but his ceiling's probably maybe a little higher, maybe about the same. But he is more raw than Fultz is, so I do give it an A+. Then the next pick is going to be De'Aaron Fox to the Sacramento Kings. And as I already said, he's the third best player. I'm giving him an A+. The Kings need talent. That's all they need. They need a good player. If they drafted any good player at 5, I'd probably give them a good grade. That team doesn't know what they're doing, so they nailed this. They got a great point guard. He's going to make space for him. He's going to run. Going to pass. I hope that they play correctly with him. I hope that they go up tempo and really take advantage of what he can do with a team that's really lacking great players. I hope that they make this work. Then the first pick I really don't like is Jonathan Isaac to the Magic. I'm going to give it a B-. I think Jonathan Isaac's a really good player, and on a different team I would like it, but I do not like it for the Magic. I either think they needed to trade it, or even if they would have maybe reached on somebody else, I might have been okay with it. He's probably right around 6 on talent, but he's the player that you already have. You've been drafting uber athletic, talented guys who can play defense for the last 4 years, and none of them have developed. Alfred Payton hasn't developed. He's an athletic point guard who doesn't have any offense. Aaron Gordon, same thing. And then you got Victor Oladipo, and the same thing. Now he's been jumping around on the trade block, but it's the same exact player, the same mold. Yeah, and Nizanya too, the same exact kind of player every year, and I don't know why they just haven't realized that they can't draft a defensive guy who's raw every single year. Once in a while, I'm fine with it. Like, if it would have went one pick later, it would have been the T-Wolves pick, which would have eventually went to the Bulls, I would have liked it more. And then we're going to go down to number 7, which is Lauri Markkanen. I kind of like the pick. I'll give it a solid B. It's not going to blow your socks off. He's a good shooter. He's got a lot of skill. He's got a lot of length. And he's really quick for his position, which is what I really like about him. But he's kind of skinny, and that's what he is. So he might be the best shooter in this draft right now, which is crazy to think of, since he's a stretch four. So I like it. I don't love it. So I'll give it a solid B. And then this might be the craziest pick so far. It's going to be number 8, which is going to be Frank Ntilikina from France. He's a big, long, athletic guy. And I feel like every year there's one of these guys. There was Dante Exum a couple years ago. We don't really know everything that's coming from him. We just see flashes of brilliance for him. I'm going to give the pick a B-. I don't love it. And the reason I don't love it is because the next pick would have been way better. Dennis Smith went a pick later, and Dennis Smith is a pick-and-roll machine. And he's a much better fit for a team who can't do anything right, it seems like. And I kind of would have liked to see, Chris Stapps have a nice pick-and-roll man. I don't know what, this Frenchman's going to do for him. He might give him a great defensive identity. He might not be able to develop. It's hard to say. So then we're going to go down to the Mavericks, Dennis Smith. I'm going to give it an A. At number 9, he's a good value. It's probably about right where he's worth, but he's good, and I would love to see him work with Rick Carlisle. He's an offensive mastermind, and having a young guard who can act, he hasn't had a real good young guard in a while. They always are grabbing these veterans, which he makes it work, but I'd love to see Rick Carlisle mold him into what he can be. I think that is a perfect fit, not only for Dennis Smith. This is an A-plus fit for Dennis Smith in the fact that if he could have picked where he wanted to go, this is probably where I would pick. Obviously, you want to go high and make more money, but he's going to get great coaching, and that's part of what I think really develops a prospect. And then you get to pick and pock with Dirk early on in your career. You're going to have a lot of other things going on. So that's great. And we're going to go on to Zach Collins. So first pick, Sacramento decides to knock it out of the park. The second pick, not nearly as good. He came off the bench in college, which I always kind of find to be interesting, picking a bench player. You couldn't even start in college. I'm not going to kill it completely because – I mean, Deion Waiters and Carlos Boozer were bench players. And they've been decent pros. They haven't been crazy good pros. But what he basically is he's a big who can just kind of make stuff happen in the paint. He's like Anderson Varejao, if you will. I don't love the pick. I'm going to give it a B, B-, actually. I think there was definitely more talented players who could make a better impact later, a couple picks later. I think Malik Monk, Luke Kennard, Justin Jackson, and even like TJ Leaf would have been better values. Not necessarily that Zach Collins is a bad player. I think they reached on him, and then if you're a team like the Kings who just needs talent, you get talent. I kind of get playing it safe because you've had like Ben McLemore and Nick Stauskas, etc., not work out at all. But I don't like the pick when you need talent. I believe this pick ended up going to the Blazers in the end. So the Knicks didn't completely screw up. They ended up getting Justin Jackson in the end. So if you end up grading that trade, that's an A. The pick at the surface is not good. Going down, number 11, Malik Monk to the Charlotte Hornets. I love this pick. We talk about Lauri Markkanen being maybe the best shooter. This is the other guy who's in contention for the best shooter. He's explosive. He's a great scorer. They're probably going to start him off the bench, and he's going to be an offensive spark plug. And I'm fine with that. If he wants to play the defensive scorer role, the role that O.J. Mayo played midway through his career, I like it. I think he's a little bit undervalued, but this ends up being a pretty good pick. I like the fit. He'll work with Nick Batum. He'll work with Kemba Walker. He'll get some good looks. And we'll really see his skills show out. So I'm going to give it a B+. I don't know if there's really an A+ player this late in the draft, but I really like the value of this pick. Going down one more, Luke Kennard, kind of a similar player to Monk. He's probably the third best shooter after Markin and Monk. And that's exactly what the Pistons need. They really need to space the floor. Andre Drummond clogs in the middle. KCP never really shot it that well. And so they really need that shooter, and they got him. I think he'll probably be on the bench at first, get a lot of good looks up. He'll probably eventually end up getting some starting spot minutes, really get the range that they desperately needed. And I've heard from various sources around the Pistons organization that they really think he can actually distribute the ball and play point guard for him, which he hasn't done a ton of, but I think he definitely has those skills. So it's probably an A- pick as well. And the only reason I'm going to give it a little bit higher pick, even though I think Monk's a better player, I think the Pistons just really needed this player even a little more than the Hornets did. And I'm just going to quickly do the next three picks to wrap it up. Donovan Mitchell, who was picked by the Nuggets but ended up going to the Jazz, really fits the team identity, being a great defensive player. But he really can't do much on offense. The Jazz do need a lot of help in the backcourt. They did just get Ricky Rubio, but this team, when George Hill was not on the floor last year, really struggled. Dante Exum did not look great. Raul Neto shouldn't be playing a lot of minutes for any team. So I kind of like it. I'm going to give it a B- also because he's a reach. I think he's actually mid-20s value, not number 13. So he's quite a reach, but he fits the team identity. So I don't hate it. And then the next pick is going to be Idris Adebayo from, you know, he's from Kentucky, and he ends up going to the Heat. This is a really big reach. I hadn't even heard of him being really in this range. I've heard late first, maybe, or even I've seen him mocked into the second round, and that's kind of where I thought he was going to be. He reminds me of Bismack Biyombo. He can guard multiple spots on the floor, and I think that's kind of what the Heat wanted. They want somebody other than Hassan Whiteside who's going to be more of a threat defensively. I kind of like his fit with Whiteside and, like, Justice Winslow in the future, but I do think it's a reach, so I'm actually going to give him a C+. That's such a big reach. You can get a lot more value. Initially considering the next pick is going to be Justin Jackson, who's the best player left in the draft to this point. He's probably the last guy left who is going to give you anything, potentially, and you missed on him to pick a guy who is a second-round player. I don't like it, so you're going to get a C+ from me. So going back to the fact that I'm going to grade this pick in two different ways because I did that with the previous pick for the Kings. If this were to go to – actually, it doesn't matter where this pick was. At 15, this is an A. He's the best player left. You can argue for, like, Josh Hart or Frank Mason, who are former good college players, but I don't necessarily think good college player means a good NBA prospect. So I'm going to say this is the best player left. So this is an A. And this is the player that I was talking about earlier that the Kings desperately needed. They needed a guy who can actually make a difference for them, and he might be the next Rudy Gay, which is funny since they have Rudy Gay, but he's probably going to leave. So that's great. They have a younger version of Rudy Gay, and then they also get De'Aaron Fox. I love it. It's a great duo, and he has very good shooting. He's got a lot of great offensive skills, and I think this is the best pick of the best pick in the draft is terminus value. We're talking about other players. We know where they're worth. We know that Fultz is the number one player, but you didn't steal him. He's at number one. So this is a steal to me. I wouldn't have been horribly mad if he went at, like, number nine. I think it would have been a little bit of a reach, but it would have – that speaks a lot to how good he is. Any thoughts by you, Jordan?
So I agree with most of this. Some things I'll add. I like the Lonzo pick a little more than you do. I agree that De'Aaron Fox is a better player, but obviously the Lakers want the flash. they kind of want the they sort of had to give in to the hype around Lonzo Ball because most of Laker Nation loves him. Most of Laker Nation was pretty certain that they were going to have Lonzo, and Lonzo was going to take him to, you know, at some point in the near future. They're not saying this season, but a lot of Laker Nation thinks Lonzo Ball is going to be the one who leads him to a title. So I kind of get why they had to go with that. Even though they weren't in love with him when they were working him out, they had to work him out twice. They had some issues with his conditioning. I feel like they still kind of knew they had to take him. Some other things I'll add. I think that Collins was a terrible pick. I think that Malik Monk is a way better player. I think the thing that makes Malik Monk such a valuable player is that he fills a role. He fills a role that already exists in the NBA. The guy who's maybe a little bit undersized to play the two guard, but he's going to come in off the bench and score. This is like every team wants this guy. They want a Lou Williams. They want a Jamal Crawford. The Jazz kind of want Alec Burks to be that guy. Like every team wants this player who can come in and just score on anybody. And I think it's helpful to come into the league and to have that role already defined. This is why athletic defensive wings get drafted so often, is because of Jimmy Butler, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard. There's a role for those kind of guys, so it's why they always get drafted so high. This is the reason that it's always hard to decide where centers are going to go, because we don't know what the role of a center is anymore. The other thing I'll say is I have a better comparison for Adebayo, and I think you're going to love this. Cliff Alexander. That's who Adebayo is. Who does Cliff Alexander play for? I think it's Portland. I don't know. He doesn't get minutes. So I think that's a wasted pick.
Love it.
Justin Jackson, I think, much better player. He's a guy who has an actual role in the NBA. He can come in, be a wing, potentially get to the point where he's a polished offensive player. The other thing, last thing we'll talk about before we move on from the draft, there's been a little bit of buzz recently about how many freshman players there were drafted. I think it was the entirety of the lottery, aside from Neil Akina, I think, was freshman players. I might be wrong there. For the most part, it was mostly freshman players. A lot of people are worried. Chill. I think if we have another year where you have the entire lottery as freshman players, if next year's draft is the same way, then you're going to want to look and see if there are issues, because the past couple years, it's just been a couple one-and-done players. But you have guys like Buddy Hield, who spend a lot of time in college, and they get drafted for how polished they are. So I don't think it's an issue yet. One thing I will add is the Frank Ntilikina pick. I think this is interesting because the Knicks picking him, it sort of ignited a lot of discussion about, obviously, Phil Jackson, because this was before Phil got fired. This is sort of when a lot of mainstream sports media started treating the triangle like a dirty word. Like, the triangle offense. Oh, no. It's this old, outdated thing. And I just want to mention, I have to talk about this before I forget, that the triangle offense is not a dirty word. The way Phil Jackson sees the triangle offense in the modern NBA wouldn't work. But the idea of wanting to use triangle principles, use quote-unquote the triangle offense, even though it's something you can modify to fit your needs, to fit your personnel, is ridiculous. And so, you know, that pick, obviously, a lot of people say they drafted Ntilikina to fit the triangle. What are they going to do now? I just had to get that out there. The triangle's not a dirty word. It's a good thing Phil got fired. Ntilikina, we'll see what he gives them. He might be great, probably not. He'll probably be a good player.
Yeah, the one last thing on the draft, just briefly, is Harry Giles getting drafted at number 20. I think that's fine. Former number one pick, not number one pick, but number one high school player, high upside, but he has an ACL injury, I think, at number 20. Most number 20 players don't turn into anything special, so I'm fine with the pick. I don't have a lot of say on it, but I definitely think that it's fine. You're not wasting anything at number 20.
Yeah, it's kind of like how, what was his name, Skal Libassier went. You know, a lot of people didn't think he was going to get drafted as high as he did. They thought he might not get drafted at all because he was supposed to be really good, and then he wasn't that great when he came off the bench in college. I kind of like it when it's, you know, you've seen flashes of brilliance and it just wasn't there for the year you spent in college. I think it's fine to not worry about wasting a pick on a potentially high upside player late in the draft. All right, we're going to get into the current state of different teams after some moves have already been made. We'll talk about the moves that have already been made, then we'll get into rumors later. So the first big deal that happened right before free agency started, it was a couple days ago, was the Chris Paul trade to Houston. Traded for Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, and I believe a couple picks, worthless picks from Houston. This was the first of many things to sort of come out of left field. A lot of people were expecting if Chris Paul was going to leave, it wasn't going to be to Houston. Apparently the rumors were, and the reports were that he was pissed off because there was a deal a little while back, a possible deal for Austin Rivers for Melo, and Doc didn't take it. Doc obviously denies that this happened. I don't know, I feel like even if that's not exactly true, I can see why Chris Paul was kind of done in Clipperland. It feels like they didn't really, every year they kind of just said we're going to keep together and then not make any important moves. And I feel like that probably bugged Chris Paul because they never had a good wing ever in his entirety of his career as a Clipper. They never got a good wing, and so I kind of see why he wanted to go play with someone who has some spark in James Harden, but I don't know if they're actually going to be able to play together. Do you? They're both ball-dominant guards.
The only thing that gives me a little bit of hope is that Mike D'Antonio is the coach, and if anybody's going to make an offense work, it's going to be Mike D'Antonio. They both need the ball a lot. I have a little bit of faith that James Harden might be able to step back and just kind of stroke some threes. He might be comfortable with that. I think it's going to take a while for this team to win. They're going to lose more games than they did last year, especially around the All-Star break. They're probably not going to have that good of a record. It's going to take a while for them to figure out how to play together. I have faith in Mike D'Antonio. That's the only reason. I don't think he's a great coach, but offensively, if he's going to make anything work, he's the guy to do it. I do find it interesting that they finally got the star that they've so coveted, that they finally needed another guy other than Harden. I did not think it was going to be Chris Paul. This is one of those deals I just did not see coming. I didn't like the fit, and it happened. Totally makes sense for Chris Paul, though. They've had the same two problems for the last 4 years, and they never fixed them. No wing, no bench depth, and no front court depth, and they haven't fixed it ever. So I totally get it. We'll talk more about Blake Griffin re-signing there, too, later. But the next big trade is Jimmy Butler going to Minnesota, which we predicted last week. And we predicted the exact terms on which he got traded, which I think is interesting. The reason that is because those are really the only assets that Minnesota could afford giving up. So it wasn't too hard to predict exactly what would happen. There's a lot of flock about this trade, because Zach LaVine's coming off an ACL injury. For certain players, I don't think it's that big of a deal anymore because of how far medicine's developed. And there's two ways that people develop. If they're not a high flyer, they can come back. This is going to be a bad example because he got hurt again, but Jabari Parker had a good beginning of the year coming off an ACL injury. He's not a high flyer. He hurt it again, but that's besides the point. I'm using it just purely from a basketball standpoint of how they play the game. He had a really good year coming off. And then there's the other opposite side is if a player needs it explosively, like Derrick Rose does, he can never be the same guy again. And unfortunately, Zach LaVine is kind of in the middle. He needs his explosive, but he can't shoot the ball. He has other skills. So I don't think he's horrible value there. If he's the third, like the throw-in number three, I like it. And the next thing is Chris Dunn. I'm a big fan of him still. He had a really poor season. He didn't play a lot of minutes, though, but he greeted out one of the worst rookies. I like to think that he still has value there. If he was drafted 2 or 3 years ago, I'd be more worried than he just played his rookie year and he didn't get a lot of starting minutes. After next year, if he doesn't do anything, then I'm going to say, yeah, the Bulls got freaking robbed. Especially considering thought that this pick would take a lot more to get Jimmy Butler. I thought Paul George might go for kind of cheap, but I definitely didn't expect Jimmy Butler to get moved so soon. But I mean, we did predict the exact thing, and then they ended up getting who they had with the pick. When you're just talking about a theoretical seventh pick, I think it maybe holds more value. But then when you see who they get a, you know, stretch four. Kind of weird. I think it fits kind of with who they want to be, but they don't. I don't think the Bulls really even know who they want to be now, because Dunn and Markin are kind of different players. But I kind of see a potential, you know, pick and pop thing going on with them. I love Chris. You know, part of what I liked about Chris Dunn was his fit with Tom Thibodeau. So I don't know how he fits at the Bulls, because that's what I liked about him. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like, for one thing, I don't know if we can say for certain that Hoiberg is going to stay around. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're even going to have a coach that wants to space the floor and give Markkanen any minutes. So I really don't know. I mean, I feel like the reports going just every which way on what Boston was offering for Jimmy Butler and PG and whether or not they were and weren't making deals. So I feel like from Chicago's perspective, if there was a deal by Boston that they just didn't accept, I don't understand why you wouldn't take it, because Boston can beat anybody's deal for any player in the league. They can beat any, you know, they can beat any offer for any good player. So I don't know if, you know, I don't know if there was some ulterior motive of them just not wanting him to go to Chicago or go to Boston or what have you. But I think, obviously, Minnesota's end, perfect. Jimmy Butler gets to go play with Tibbs again. From what I understand, from what I hear, he likes Tibbs a lot more than he liked Hoiberg. He didn't really like Fred Hoiberg, which is why there were some reports of him not being a good locker room presence, because they didn't really get along. I think Minnesota has, they're on the up and up. They obviously got an all-star player in Jimmy Butler, one of the best like two-way wings in the league. And part of the reason that Andrew Wiggins got drafted number one a couple years ago is because people expect him to develop into a Jimmy Butler type player. So I think the fit of those two starting together is going to be nothing but good for Andrew Wiggins. Maybe get him to actually play defense like he was supposed to. So I think from Minnesota's end, clearly incredible deal. Obviously, the other player who was part of this whole saga is Paul George, ending up in Oklahoma City, which is another out of left field. Nobody expected that. No one was talking about it until it happened. Traded for pennies on the dollar for Victor Oladipo on an awful contract. He's set to make $84 million. And Domantas Sabonis... and I don't even think any picks were included. So for whatever reason, Paul George ended up in Oklahoma City. I think it's pretty fair to say he's not going to stay there unless they do incredibly well. I felt like if they could, you know, make a move and still get Blake Griffin, I don't know what their cap situation is, but getting rid of Oladipo, I felt they could probably get Blake Griffin. And then you have a big three. You have a legitimate, really good team. But I feel like they couldn't, without getting a third piece, this is just going to be another team that has no shot to beat the Warriors and has no shot to beat anybody relevant, and they're just going to be a good playoff team, and that's what's going to happen.
I agree with that. I don't think that they gave up really anything, though. So a one-year rental to get rid of a bad contract and a player who's never going to make a difference for your team is okay. If they gave up somebody who mattered more, I would be a little more worried. I am really surprised that, especially here, so when you look at the trade, that Boston, once again, didn't get him. They could have given up just Jay Crowder in a first, that would have been a better pick. They could have given, you know, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder would have been a better two-team, you know, two-player deal. There's so many things they could have given that would have been way better deals. Unless Indiana thinks that Oladipo is still the player they thought he was going to be when he came out, but we're now at the point where it's been a couple of years, we really probably know what he's going to be. And he's not going to be a star player, and he's definitely not worth the contract that he's on. So I like the deal for OKC in that sense. But what they're going to be is they're going to be a worse version of the same Thunder they were a couple of years ago. They don't have Ibaka anymore, and Paul George he's not Kevin Durant. He's a little better defensively, or at least what Kevin Durant was a couple of years ago defensively, not counting the finals Kevin Durant, who was a different defensive animal than he's ever been. We're not going to count that version of Kevin Durant. We're going to compare him to when he was on the Thunder, and he didn't ever play that good defense compared to what he did in the finals. So defensively, they probably get an improvement over that Kevin Durant, and then offensively, obviously not the same. I don't think that Paul George needs the ball a lot. which is huge because Russell Westbrook needs the ball every play. He's probably an even higher usage player than, you know, James Harden. He needs the ball all the time. I have a hard time believing he's going to get a triple double next year with Paul George, you know, standing there wanting to shoot threes. Not to say that Paul George can't create offense, because he can. So I like the deal. He's not going to resign, in my opinion. I think there's like a 3% chance. The only way is if he loves the team. If he loves the team, he loves Billy Donovan, he loves Russell Westbrook, I can see him coming back. Because that's already going to be a better team than he had in Indiana. So that's for sure. But what we were talking about is the only way, you know, last week was the only way he stays at the team that gets him is if that team is going to have a chance to be in the finals at least. And so he's probably going to L.A., I'll be honest with you. He's going to L.A. now. So the teams that needed him that could have had a play for him to not go to L.A. really messed up. But a big winner is L.A. They didn't waste their picks. They didn't get greedy to be, you know, they might be able to be kind of bad again for one more year, get another good young player, and then still get Paul George. So they really won this in the end. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it was it's a pretty smart move to just wait the long game if you're the Lakers. I do like that they gave him a pretty low ball offer. They were just like, we'll give you Randall, we'll give you like the 27th pick. I think it's good security just to say, hey, we'll throw you a couple things we're not all that worried about, just to be sure. Obviously, the Pacers, there are reports that Kevin Pritchard just didn't want to give Paul George what he wanted. So he would refuse to send him to anywhere Paul George would actually want to go, which might be why he ended up in Oklahoma City. So I think it was pretty smart for them not to offer a lot, to offer guys you can give up. You're not worried about Julius Randle being an incredible player. You're not worried about the 27th pick turning into an incredible player. And then obviously when they didn't take it, all right, just wait it out. Basically, call the bluff of anyone who thinks that Paul George is going to re-sign, because when you say, I want to be a Laker, that's a big deal. So surprisingly, Blake Griffin decided to stay a Clipper even after it was like the day after the Chris Paul trade. He signed his extension, which is a little surprising to me because their only other decent player now with Redick gone is DeAndre Jordan. But maybe, I don't know, maybe Blake's the kind of guy who wants to be his team now and he's excited. He is a pretty versatile player. A little bit of a playmaker at the four. So do you think this is just going to be the Blake show from now on?
I think so. What worries me about Blake Griffin is the injury history. He gets injured every single year. I don't see Blake Griffin being able to lead a team when he can't even make it through a one season without getting hurt. I love a lot of his skill set and about being able to move the ball, stuff like that. I do like that when you're talking about Blake Griffin. I never really liked his fit with DeAndre Jordan, but I could definitely see it. You know, he's still going to throw him up lobs, things like that. I thought Blake Griffin was gone right when they got beat out by the Jazz. I'm like, okay, Blake Griffin's not re-signing. Chris Paul, I thought, was a better chance, honestly. I definitely thought he was going to end up in like Oklahoma City, somewhere like that. Houston, maybe, somewhere he could win games. But we now know he doesn't value that, which is fine. Not everyone needs to win games. I don't think there's anything wrong with somebody who wants to take their max and make money. I mean, that's really why you're in the NBA, right? To make money. That's your job. I'm not going to knock him for it. I don't love it. I think that there was some rumors that Paul George would still want to go to LA, but would go to the Clippers. I think this is kind of not going to happen. I have heard it, though. Maybe that's what they're pitched to, you know, Blake Griffin. They're like, okay, we're going to get Paul George. We're still going to have a big three. If that's what he's thinking, I mean, I guess it's okay, but he's not going to the Clippers. What do you think?
I think if the Clippers can come out of free agency with Gallinari, then you're looking at, all right, I understand why Blake wanted to stay. They might go for Rondo to start instead of Beverly at the point. You know, they might be filling in with some decent players and still be a playoff team. So I can see why Blake would be content with being a solid team, clearly not a contender, and then just making his money. Obviously, the secondary player after no one got Blake Griffin was Paul Millsap. Funnily enough, though, it seemed like pretty much everyone who wanted him just kind of fell off the map one by one until it was clear he was going to go to Denver, and they were just working out the terms of the deal, because I'm pretty sure he signed a 3-year deal. Which makes a lot of sense for a guy his age. He's 32, 33. So he's getting up there. I can see... I love this fit. This is a really good fit next to Jokic. Jokic is a 6'10", 6'11 center, who's an incredible passer. And with Paul Millsap also being a really good passer who can space the floor, you have some really interesting front court options there with posting them up, having people move around, cut around the post. Some really interesting options for what they can do, especially helpful having a guy who can shoot now instead of trying to start Kenneth Faried next to a guy like Moutier who can't shoot. Now you're less worried about giving Moutier minutes because you have guys around him who can shoot and space around him. So I think it's a really great fit, Millsap in Denver, for a expensive but not four-year deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Three-year, $90 million. It's quite a big deal, but this is a team who wanted to get Kevin Love and was willing to give up Gary Harris to do it. And Gary Harris is probably their best young player. Now they get to keep Gary Harris. They get Paul Millsap, who's about on the same level of Kevin Love. So I definitely think they ended up doing really well. I'm curious what they end up doing with Faried, because he's on a little bit bigger of a contract than I want him to be on. I kind of like the, oh, he's a defensive spark plug. He can give you rebounds on the bench. That's a valuable role. I'm not going to pretend it isn't. But it's not that valuable for what his contract is. So maybe they'll move him, get another asset. I would be fine with that. I'd like to see them get a more true point guard. I'm not sure if I really believe in Moutier at this point. He shot horribly. But I really like keeping Gary Harris. So you get Gary Harris, and then, you know, obviously Jokic was a top five center last year. He was great. So that fit up in the front court. Millsap can still shoot. He can do a lot of things for you. It's a really good rebounding team. Paul Millsap's always been a good rebounder. Even when he was in Utah, he was a fantastic rebounder. So I love that. What kind of surprises me is that he didn't end up in Phoenix. There was two big players for Kevin Love, like I talked about with Denver, and I thought they both, when those trades crumbled, and these were trades for Kevin Love to go to either Phoenix or, you know, the Nuggets, so that the Cavaliers could get basically Paul George. When those all faded, I was like, okay, well, Paul Millsap's probably going to he's either going to Phoenix or Denver. And the main reason that I thought he was going to Phoenix, because I really thought they were in more of a win now mode. When they're willing to give up other pieces, I don't think they're as ready, but they would have had Bledsoe, then they would have had then they have Booker, obviously, and they just got they got the three of the future in Justin Jackson, and then they would have had Millsap. That's a pretty, just right there, those four alone, that's a good team. Not a fantastic team, but that's a pretty good team. But I end up liking the fit for the Nuggets better. I just more thought that the Phoenix was more willing to spend the money. But I really like the deal, especially for Millsap. You know, at the end of your career, you know, let's make $30 million over the next 3 years. That's great. Now, talking about, you know, we're talking about where Millsap came from. He came from the Jazz, and that's where drafted him. So a big thing that happened for the Jazz is that they traded for Ricky Rubio. What do you think about that?
I actually love this move. Obviously, George Hill was a fantastic fit. He's probably going to leave now. The reports coming out are that Hayward wanted to play with a pass-first point, naming Ricky Rubio. I was kind of worried about this deal, because when the rumors first started popping up, you were telling me Rodney Hood was on the chopping block. He's a player we both love and want him to stay in Utah. But it's insanely good value to trade him for just a pick. I think it's a first-round pick, but there's some stipulations. It might end up being a second-round pick is what I've heard. Which is insanely good value for a guy who can start on a good team. He's way better defensively than a lot of people give him credit for, so I think he's going to fit right in to sort of the Jazz hard-nosed defense focus. But I think it'll be really helpful for Gordon Hayward, who I think it's likely for him to stay. I think it's super helpful for him to be playing with a guy who's more of a ball-dominant sort of point guard who can make sure that Hayward doesn't have to be an on-ball player all the time. You saw in the playoffs, they had a lot of lineups where when George Hill was out, that they didn't have a true point guard on the floor. They would play with three wings, three or four wings, and then one or two bigs. And Gordon Hayward had to be the primary ball handler in a lot of those lineups. I kind of like having a guy who can handle the ball, who's a pass-first player, who's a he's going to get you the ball where you want it when you want it. And so I think it's a pretty good fit. And if the Jazz end up keeping George Hill, it's not like Ricky Rubio's a guy with an ego who demands to start. He's a guy who would be an incredible bench player. So it's pretty much a good move on all ends. I also think it was a good move for Minnesota to get rid of him because they obviously ended up getting Jeff Teague. They wanted to improve their point guard spot so that they could be a sort of true player now. And it's a good move to just get an asset in the future that you're not really worried about where that asset comes. You shed Rubio's contract, you get rid of Rubio so that you can focus on free agency now for their point guard. So I think it's a pretty good move on both sides for the Jazz to keep Rubio. Obviously, the Jazz also kept Joe Ingles. Signed him to a 3-year, 50-something million deal. So I think both of those are good moves for the Jazz.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think the Jazz are, once again, going to be that team that you're like, wow, they're not the super team, but they're going to play really well. They're probably going to still have about 50 wins like they did last year. I really like the idea of running a lineup where it's Rubio, Hood, Ingles, Hayward, and Gobert. There's going to be so many open threes for those three guys, and I just love the idea of it. I think Hood and Hayward are going to benefit the most. Ingles shot really well from three last year, not in the playoffs, but in the regular season. He was in the top five in three-point percentage, so I don't worry about him as much. But when we're talking about Hood, who was up and down, him getting open looks is going to be good for him to develop. And then you already touched on this, but the fact that they got a great bargain deal for Rubio when they initially were giving up a couple of players, Hood and another guy, Exum and a first rounder, which was way too much to ask for Rubio, so they eventually negotiated down to just the pick. I love it. If you're not even in the lottery, you're probably not going to get a guy who's going to contribute as much as Rubio would, so I think this is fine, and they're trying to win. As long as they keep Hayward, this is going to be a really, really good team. And I think the Ingles deal isn't too bad. I don't necessarily think he should be making quite that much money, but I think they're signing him more as like an insurance policy unless Hayward doesn't come back. And the Jazz had, before these deals happened, they had the most cap room of any team in the league. So I'm okay with it. They have the cap room to afford it. But now talking about the other big powerhouse in the West is the Golden State Warriors. Curry got a max deal. He's going to make more next season than he has in the last 4 years combined. I think he deserves a max. He made that team relevant. That team got bought for only a couple hundred million, is now valued over $2.6 billion today. I saw a report about that. And a lot of that's Curry. He made that team more relevant. I don't want to say it's just him, because obviously it's a combination of Kerr and Clay playing well and that front office developing a good team. But Steph Curry was the face of the team. You could argue if it's him or Durant now. It is him, but Durant's a great player, top five player. And then KD, took less. He took less money. He's, a 2-year, $53 or $54 million deal. He took less money, so that cap situation can work, because you're still going to have to renegotiate Draymond in the future. You're going to have to renegotiate Klay Thompson in the future. And I've already heard rumors about Klay Thompson getting recruited to go somewhere else. So if you kind of make the money work a little bit better, that's less likely to happen. And I think this might show that they're worried about Klay leaving. I know it's just like, oh, KD signed for less, so that's a great thing for him. I think if you're KD, you've already shown it's not about money, or you would have stayed in OKC because they could have offered you the most money. It's about winning, right? You've made that decision in your career to take less money to win. And I'm curious if KD in a couple of years after this deal will do the LeBron and be like, I'm going to take max every single year. I'm going to re-sign every time there's a new TV deal so I can make the most money like LeBron did. If he's going to change his mind after he's won maybe two or three rings, that's something I'm going to be interested to see. But just at the surface, yeah, I like it. What about you?
Yeah, Golden State they've told Kevin Durant probably multiple times that once we get everybody else's contract figured out in the next couple years, you'll get your max money. We'll give you 5 years, $200+ million it's going to be at that point. He's going to be making probably $45-50 million a year. They've promised him they're going to get him that money, which is why he's perfectly happy taking a pay cut now. The specific number just came out today. It's a 2-year, $53 million deal. I'm certain that the second year is a player option, so that he can sort of renegotiate if they need to at the end of this next upcoming season. Obviously, they've been doing their best to keep everybody. They got Andre Iguodala coming back on 3 years, $45 million. Something to that effect. He's averaging out to be about $15 million a year. They didn't want to give him that much at first, but obviously he just kind of played them a little bit, said, I might go to Houston, I might go to San Antonio, and they eventually caved. He's obviously worth that kind of money. They just were, obviously, if you're Golden State, you want to give everybody as little as you possibly can, so you can afford all these big contracts for these $40 million a year players in Curry and Durant. But it's looking like Golden State, they've probably got a handle on it. With Kevin Durant being willing to take, you know, everyone expected him to make a $31 million deal, $31 million a year for this year and then next year. So him jumping down to making just over $25 million, probably just to help him out with the luxury tax is what I'm thinking. I don't know if there's anyone else they're worried about going after in free agency. So I'm guessing this is just to be a little bit lighter on the owner's pockets so that in the future, when they have to pay more for the luxury tax once Clay comes up, probably just to help them out, you know, so that when the real luxury tax hits, that they've had a couple years of it being not quite as bad. So pretty good moves by Golden State. Everyone kind of expected them to keep everybody. Other teams keeping their players. You've got the Pelicans giving Drew Holiday a little bit more than he should be making. It's a five-year deal, 125, with some incentives that could bump it up to 150 by the time all is said and done. Clearly, that's more than he's worth. But when you're the Pelicans and you're a team with two really good players in the front court and no other players interested in going there, I feel like you kind of have to keep Drew Holiday. Same situation in Toronto. They're paying Kyle Lowry $100 million over 3 years to keep him. They're paying Serge Ibaka a lot of money to keep him. This seems like teams that are just content being where they are, being decent teams. Obviously, the Pelicans think they can make a playoff push with two of the best bigs in the league. I feel like you really don't have any other option if you're those teams. You want to keep your good players so that you can keep selling tickets. You know you're not going to be contenders, so you're just going to overpay for the next few years until hopefully 3 years down the line, Golden State can't make the money work, and hopefully then you can be a contender. So it seems to make sense to me, those teams just trying to keep their players.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's interesting that Drew Holiday signed for so much. I think maybe they still think it's 2013 and he still has his high stock. When they got him initially, that was a good deal because people still thought Drew Holiday was the next big thing. But 4 years later, he hasn't been the next big thing, so he's not going to be the next big thing. But I definitely get that. Teams like Memphis have paid and overpaid players. Like Mike Conley's a good last year. He got a huge deal. Stuff like that. They need to overpay to keep a team intact. I like the idea of teams trying to stay mediocre. And the reason is because other than that, there's going to be six super teams and that's it. If everybody's just like, oh, I can't win, then I'm going to dump my stars. And it's just like who can tank the most versus who can have a super team. And I hope that never happens. I definitely think from a financial perspective, some of these teams are just like, okay, let's turn a profit. Let's get a good team on the floor. So I like that. But now let's go to some teams that like made really good deals. The first deal that really strikes me that I love is JJ Redick to the 76ers. We talked about their big three young studs. This team needs spacing desperately. Last year they cannot space the floor. What do? They get JJ Redick. He is a sniper. He's gonna do so many good things. He can still play pretty good defense. And, you know, he's on the end of his career, so he signs a one-year prove-it deal. And that shows it's good on both ends. It's good for the Sixers because they can show another veteran shooter next year who's maybe even a little bit younger, like, hey, look what we can do with J.J. Redick. Imagine if your 7 years younger legs were here. And then they can get that spot-up shooter they need who's a little bit better, a little bit younger, whatever. And then it's great for Redick because if he has a good year, he can go wherever he wants and sign a two-year deal that's like massive for a guy that's like, okay, let's make one less push with JJ Redick. So I love it on both ends. And I love what it is, you know, from a basketball perspective. I think the 76ers are going to be really good, which is weird to say.
I think, the Sixers made two really good moves in signing Amir Johnson to a big one-year deal. I think it's $13 million for 1 year, and then J.J. Redick to a one-year $23 million deal. Clearly makes sense on both ends, because if you're J.J. Redick, the other offers you were getting was, I think Brooklyn was offering 3 years and something in the 30s. Clearly makes a lot of sense. to jump and make $23 million this year. Next year, if you don't get injured and you have a really good season, then you might get a fat two-year deal for a team that sort of needs shooting that isn't Philadelphia next year. You might have the Magic say, we really need a shooter. Come here. We'll pay you big money. Clearly, they're prone to throwing money at people if they feel like they need him. See Bismack Biyombo. So I feel like it's pretty smart move for both those players. Philadelphia is going to be really good next year, because I need you all to imagine the lineup, the starting lineup. You've got Fultz, who can play on ball or off ball. You've got J.J. Redick, who, more than just being a guy who can stand and shoot, he's going to run around screens and be a shooter. He's more of a Kyle Korver than of a J.R. Smith, who's more of a spot-up shooter who just kind of stands there. And him having gravity is going to open up so much stuff for Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons is a terrible shooter, which is going to open up sort of all of their offense. And then you're going to have Simmons, who's, you know, they said the next LeBron, clearly not, but could be a generationally good talent. Then you can start either Saric if you want more spacing, if you want a Euro big, or Amir Johnson if you want a defender, hard-nosed kind of guy. The really nice thing is they now have a lot of flexibility with their bigs. A lot of people were kind of worried when they still had Noel and they had Okafor and they had Embiid. Everyone was like, these three players can't play together. What are they going to do? They let Noel go. They make Jahlil Okafor play as a bench player. And then they get a guy like Amir Johnson, so that you've got two guys who can't shoot in Amir Johnson and Jahlil Okafor, two guys who can in Saric and Embiid. And you can mix and match however you need. If you need shooting, you can play Saric next to Embiid. If you need defense, you can play Amir Johnson. I really like the idea of them having their options there at the big slots for whatever they're going to need in any particular game. So clearly just great moves by Philly. In the West, you obviously had some good moves by Minnesota to keep Taj Gibson, or to sign Taj Gibson. They signed Jeff Teague, who statistically was just as good as Drew Holiday last year, but he's making a lot less money. He signed, I think he's making $19 million a year compared to Drew Holiday, who's making $25 million. So pretty good moves there for Minnesota. I think we're going to see a big jump from both of these teams. Pretty excited there. Moving on from, I guess, players. The one sort of big question that was sort of non-player related question was what was going to happen with the GM situation for a couple teams. Looks like the Pacers aren't doing anything yet. They're going to let Kevin Pritchard run the show for a while. The Knicks were fielding some offers to replace Phil Jackson. They got Isaiah Thomas on the line. There were rumors about Cal. Looks like none of that's going to happen. So we're not really sure where they're going to go, though they were looking at Griffin from the Cavs. That's a pretty good move. I think the Knicks should do that. Then the Cavs, they had given Chauncey an offer, and it looks like Chauncey pulled out, so we're not really sure where the Cavs are going to go. Do you think any of these GM decisions are even going to matter?
In the end, for the Cavaliers, it's just about making LeBron happy, because everybody thinks he's going to leave. Still don't think that's going to happen. But that being said, I think that's smart from Chauncey Billups. I think he may eventually be in a front office, but if he's like, I'm not ready, I like it. I'd rather you wait until you're ready, maybe get another, director of whatever job in some front office and build a little bit of a resume before you become a GM. Because if he messes this up with the Cavs and LeBron leaves, he's never going to have a front office job in the NBA again. So from Chauncey Billups' perspective, it's smart. Other than that, I don't think it matters. Whoever ends up getting David Griffith is going to get a pretty good GM. It's hard to say how good he is, because when you have LeBron James, he's a recruiter in himself. People want to play with him because he's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of player. With that being said, I don't think in the end it's going to matter. It's just going to be what the status of the team is what's going to matter if LeBron stays. It's not going to really be who's the front man. And the team's going to pretty much be where it is now, because they couldn't make the deal that you're to love. So you're probably going to have the same team for a couple of years. And that's really what's going to happen. But with some of the minor things happening, the main thing I want to talk about is Carmelo Anthony. He wants a buyout, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen. But he has told the Knicks that he'll take a trade to the Rockets or to the Cavaliers. I think the Rockets could happen. I definitely don't think the Cavaliers can happen because I don't think they have any assets to give them that they part with. Unless they want to do a sign and trade for Ayman Shumpert, I don't think that's going to happen. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that Mel is not going to get bought out. And the Knicks have been saying before they fired Phil that if Melo was going to leave, it was going to be via trade. Houston is the main team that's trying to get in on that action. It's looking like it might happen because you never know what's going to happen in New York. Obviously, it would be centered around Ryan Anderson to make contracts even out. He makes about $20 million. Melo makes about $25 million a year. There is a trade kicker. He would make about, I believe it's $8 million more if he gets traded because it's a stipulation in his contract that went along with his no-trade clause. I honestly, though, wouldn't be shocked if Melo doesn't go anywhere because you never really know what's going to happen with New York. Moving into some of the other rumors, the big one that's been the past couple days is Gordon Hayward. Since the sort of big-name free agents that were sort of better players than Gordon Hayward all got kind of resolved fast, you know, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin. So you've got Gordon Hayward as the sort of big name in free agency that hasn't gone anywhere yet. Weirdly enough, it seemed like from what I've been hearing sort of from mainstream sort of sports coverage, pretty much everyone's counting out Utah to re-sign him. Everyone's saying either he's going to Boston or he's going to Miami, which is really weird to me because it seems like with Boston not making any moves to get someone next to him, the pitch they can offer him is come play with Isaiah Thomas, who's never going to pass you the ball. With Miami, it's come be the best player on a team that's worse than Utah. And then with Utah, it's come be almost as good as Boston, play with Rudy Gobert, play with a guy you wanted in Ricky Rubio, and make more money than anyone else can give you. Now, obviously, there's a... Brian Windhorst has been on and on, going on and on about this because he's a little biased towards Miami because that's where he covered. You know. But moving on. The rumor is that he's going to sign a 3-year deal, which is going to be the same anywhere he goes, but Miami has no state tax, so he stands to make more money there. Clearly, I think Gordon Hayward is going to be the type of guy who's going to sign his extension for as long as he can. He's obviously not a guy who has injury concerns, but I think he's a guy who's smart enough to say, I want the security of having my 5 years up front. And so, I don't know, in my mind, with the Jazz getting Rubio like he wanted for not giving up other players, still possibly being able to re-sign George Hill, it still seems most likely to me that he's going to stay in Utah. Now, if Boston had gotten a Jimmy Butler, he'd be gone. There'd be no reason not to go be the best team in the East. But I don't know. I feel like he's probably going to stay now that Boston hasn't done anything. And the reports came out today. They had a really long meeting. I think it was 3.5 hours long. Rubio flew in from Spain to attend the meeting, so I feel like I don't know. It's looking good for the Jazz, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know why they keep counting the Jazz out. I think now they have definitely the best chance. I saw an article on ESPN that was talking about there was money, legacy, and like pride or something. And Miami can offer him pride because they have this lavish lifestyle in Miami, which I don't think Gordon Hayward's the kind of guy who needs that. He went to Gonzaga. He's married now. I don't think that makes any sense. Money-wise, yeah, he can go to Utah. But I also think legacy, even though they gave legacy to Boston, but legacy is also for Utah. If you stay in one team and you lead them to be a good team, you have a better legacy. So I don't get the legacy argument. If I get it, if they have Paul George, I kind of get he wants to go and play with Brad Stevens because he played with, you know, Brad Stevens was his coach in college. That's a small thing that they give him that Boston gets over Utah. I think Quinn Snyder's still a really good coach from a coaching perspective. Brad Stevens might be a little bit better, but it's not that big of a difference. So the only thing is like, oh, he was his college coach. So they have that on him now, but I don't know if I believe that Boston without a big free agency is better than Utah, really. They have more depth, but they're similar teams. They're really good defensive teams. They both have one, you know, B-level star. This is assuming Hayward stays, Hayward versus Isaiah. So from that perspective, from a winning perspective, it's like, yeah, you're probably going to be the second seed in the East, especially now that all of the great stars from the East are all trying to go to the West. With, you know, a couple of them are leaving, Paul George and Jimmy Butler among the two headliners from the East that are now in the West. And then if Carmelo were to leave, that'd be another one, which is crazy to me. But with that being said, I don't see any reason now. It looks better and better for Utah every day. When I thought he was probably gone to Boston, you know, we've been talking about the super team that would have had Chris Stapps and him and Paul George, which would have been, you know, awesome. It would have been a finals team. But now I'd be surprised if he doesn't go to Utah, and everybody in Utah wants him to stay. He's beloved in Utah, more so than, you know, other players. Like when Deron Williams got traded, people liked him, you know, and that was 2008, but we didn't love him to the extent that they like Gordon Hayward. So that's something interesting to me. But then now we're talking about other relevant wings other than Gordon Hayward. It's Danilo Gallinari going to the Clippers. I like the fit if we're trying to be a mediocre team, which it feels like we are. We have DeAndre Jordan. There was talk about trading him. They didn't make a deal for him. They're going to keep him. You sign Blake Griffin. Now, if you get another point guard like Rondo, which would be a pretty good fit, and you need a guy that just can distribute the ball, that team is going to probably have spacing concerns because you don't have J.J. Redick anymore. But there's that. So and then you have Danilo Gallinari. Danilo Gallinari will fix the spacing concern. That's the one thing he can do. He has injury concerns, though. That's kind of what I'm worried about him as well. I feel like he's the guy everybody talks about. He's like a top five, like maybe a top five offensive small forward, but he never really does everything that you want him to do. It's like, oh, wow, he scored 19.5, and you, like, forget about him. So that's what I like about Danilo. I like the fit in a team where he's going to, you know, I don't think any championship team wants Danilo. If, like, Boston can't get Hayward, I don't think they're like, oh, let's call Danilo Gallinari. I don't think that's going to happen. So from that perspective, I love it. What about you?
Yeah, I think Gallo could be, like, he could be, like, the fourth or fifth best player on a championship team. Clearly couldn't be the third best player on a championship team. I like him because he is 6'10". He's a decent rebounder, not a great rebounder, that he can play either the three or four. You know, if the Nuggets can make some moves and keep him, that would be really good for them because they would be an incredibly deep team at that point. Obviously, if he goes to the Clippers and he's a starter, I kind of like the idea of you can either play, you know, Gallo, Blake, DeAndre, or if you need to go small, you can play Blake or DeAndre at the five, and you can play Gallo at the four. So I do think it is a good fit there. I think those are the only two sort of real options for Gallo. And this is just a testament to how top-heavy this free agency is. Is after you go from Gordon Hayward, you move to Danilo Gallinari. But yeah, I do think, you know, the Clippers do have a decent pitch for him. I think he's just going to decide if he likes Denver enough. From what I've heard, he actually really, really likes living in Denver. So it's just going to sort of turn into, do you want to be a big city guy and live in L.A. and play for a team that's no better or worse than Denver? Or do you want to stay in Denver where it's cold and apparently he really likes it? The last few players that are all that relevant in free agency, there's a couple point guards, the sort of B or C tier of point guards. You've got Derrick Rose. The Spurs were showing interest in him. I've heard that that's died down. Which is good because I don't want him in San Antonio. So I don't know where Derrick Rose is going to end up. It seems like New York does not want to keep him. So who knows where he ends up. George Hill obviously could stay in Utah, but I don't think that's where he's going to end up. There are rumors that the Lakers want him and the Knicks want him. So I think he's probably going to end up in one of those two places. I'd say it's more likely he ends up in the Knicks. Obviously because the Lakers want to give Lonzo Ball as much time as they can. As much playing time as they can. And then there's Rondo, who the only rumor I've heard that I liked was him going to the Clippers to be reunited with Doc Rivers. So those are the sort of, you know, that's kind of where I see those guys all fitting in.
Yeah, the more recent rumor on Derrick Rose is that he's going to Milwaukee, which don't really like it, but Milwaukee always likes the guy and go to the rim. They like Michael Carter-Williams for some reason, and I guess kind of like the fit because, like, Giannis can handle the ball, but Derrick Rose isn't really a good shooter, so I don't really get it. I personally prefer the fit on the Spurs, but I don't really know where the playing time would come because they re-signed Patty Mills, so Why would Derrick Rose even play? If he was on a really small contract, I think I'm okay with it. Because he kind of could play the role that Tony Parker played, but in a lesser sense. But what worries about me about him is that his usage is so high, and he's still going to be one to take a lot of bad shots at the rim. But if Derrick Rose, like, really, like, listened to Greg Popovich and took a small contract, like maybe like a one-year prove-it deal, like a one-year, like, $4 million deal or something, like maybe just barely the mid-level exception, maybe like a $5.5 million deal, I kind of like it because they don't need him, right? But he's probably better than, like, some of the guys they could probably get at the mid-level exception. And if anybody's going to maybe make a guy make, you know, correct his bad shooting issues, I like Greg Popovich to do it. So I like the deal more for the Spurs and the Bucks, because the Bucks, in my opinion, they want Brogdon to play more. And you're taking away playing time from Brogdon, but I'm never going to be like, well, you're taking playing time from Tony Parker, who's diminishing athletically, so... I don't hate it. Patty Mills kind of makes it murky. Like, when is Derrick Rose going to play? But if he's playing spot minutes, like, I'm okay with it as long as his deal's not crazy.
I do feel like, I guess it is possible to play a smaller lineup where you have both Patty Mills and Derrick Rose playing at the same time. The reason I don't want him there is because I love Dejounte Murray, and I want him to play as many minutes as possible. That kind of wraps it up from the important free agency rumors. We do want to wrap it up by talking about Boston, because Boston has been a big player in all of these things we've been talking about. They drafted early. Everyone expected them to deal maybe on draft night, before or after draft night, and they haven't dealt for anyone. They haven't made a splash in free agency yet. So it sounds like what people have been saying is that Danny Ainge wanted to wait on Gordon Hayward before he decided to go after Paul George, because they wanted to wait and see if they were going to be a win-now team or if they were going to be a waited-out team. I don't know. This makes no sense to me, because you've got Isaiah Thomas on an expiring $6 million a year deal. So if you're waiting it out for the future, you're going to let Isaiah Thomas walk for free because you're not going to pay him $30 million a year. And it seems more likely that Gordon Hayward's going to sign there if you fill in a Jimmy Butler and say, hey, look, now we have the best wing combination in the East with you and Jimmy Butler, or you and Paul George. So I really don't know what Boston's doing. They're just sitting and hoarding draft picks and not doing anything with them.
Yeah, this is the third time where I've been like, why hasn't Boston made a deal? We're talking about the trade deadline. Why didn't they make a deal? Last year, after the draft, well, we thought they were going to make a deal. And they never did, which is really confusing to me. Because I don't know what they're doing. Because they have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum now, both guys I know they don't want to get rid of. And if they wanted to get rid of Jaylen Brown, they probably could have had a deal by now, because I know that most of the deals for both the wings were too high of a price that they wanted to pay early on. I know that was also part of the thing. But then when you look at the deals that they got, Boston could have destroyed both of them, especially the Paul George deal with Oladipo and Sabonis, which is a horrible trade. So I don't get it. Give up literally any of your guys that are not needed. Avery Bradley in the pick, and that's a better deal. I already talked about that, but I still feel really passionately about it. Then Hayward's going to stay. Like, you can get rid of Hayward, and then you have some more assets, and then you can get one more guy, and you know what? You're going to be Cleveland. That's what they should have done, and I don't know what they're waiting for, unless they know something I don't know, which is really possible, that there's another deal in the works that I don't know about, or that... you know, they see something next year and they're just going to wait one more year. Then Isaiah's going to be gone. Maybe they're really looking to listen to us and move Isaiah now and just be like, okay, we're really going to wait. Then I kind of get it as well. But why go from a team that actually won the first seed in the East and is a piece away, or, you know, definitely two pieces away from being able to make the finals, and make the decision to wait again? They just seem like they can't really make up their mind. Waiting until free agency didn't matter, because even if Paul George and Jimmy Butler weren't off the market now, it was more likely that you could get them for less before free agency, before the draft and free agency happened, because you don't know the state of teams, so people aren't willing to pay more. Because when other teams are willing to pay more because they get desperate, like, let's say the Rockets didn't get Chris Paul, if all these players were still on the market right now, they would be more willing to give up more assets to get all these players. Everyone's more, the longer it goes on, the more they want them, the more they raise their price up. So Boston really messed up, and I'd be curious to see if they do anything now. I think they're going to probably lose out on Hayward now, too.
Yeah, I think Boston is just going to be mired in mediocrity now that they haven't sort of taken the the sort of best deal you can foresee happening. Paul George and Jimmy Butler are the best players you could get foresee for like the next 3 years, probably. So a little weird to me that they haven't done anything. But hey, if they know something we don't, I did see an article a couple weeks back that they're going to deal like 5 picks for Anthony Davis. If that happens, more power to you. Good job, Danny Ainge. But for now, we're not really sure what you're doing. That's it for us. Go ahead and follow us at the NBA Weekly on Twitter. If there's anything you want us to talk about that you don't hear us talking about, it, tweet it at us, and we'll make sure to cover it next week.